Welcome to Shorts Season 3. I'm Jen Thomas, I live in London, UK.
And I'm Lizzie Falconer, and I live in Portland, Oregon.
We are two long-distance friends who want to talk about what we're reading.
This podcast is about how reading short stories can show the world through different perspectives. Today we're reading The Lazy River by Zadie Smith. It was published in December 2017 in The New Yorker. We've linked the story in the show notes. Zadie Smith is one of the most well-known authors of today. She began her career with the best-selling novel White Teeth, which was published in 2000 when she was just 25. Since White Teeth, she's written a number of novels, including Northwest and Swing Time, two short story collections, a play, and her most recent publication, a nonfiction book about the experience of the pandemic called Intimations.
The Lazy River is about a group of British families on holiday at an all-inclusive hotel in a small town in the south of Spain. The characters mostly spend their time lounging in or around the Lazy River at the hotel, which Smith calls a metaphor for life. Here we are.
Here we go, Jen. Season 3. We've taken a bit of a break, but we are back to read more short stories together and talk about them and share them with as many people as we can. How are you feeling? What's going on?
I am feeling a little bit nervous. I've never felt nervous doing one of these before, but I feel like I've lost the rhythm. I'm out of practice. So hopefully this won't be too much of a bumpy re-entry.
Well, I think starting with our girl, Zadie Smith, who we've been looking for a reason to read Zadie Smith for so long. I mean, she's written so many amazing pieces of contemporary literature, whether that's fiction or nonfiction. And you found this story. So I think this is a perfect re-entry. It's a shorter, short story. It's easily digestible. I think it hits on some of the modern themes of being alive and whatever this late-stage capitalist society we're in now. And I just can't wait to talk about it with you and talk about how much we love Zadie Smith.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically an ode to Zadie Smith. This is just our reason to be able to talk about her with each other, which we've done not for the podcast, but just in the past, because we both think she's such an incredible author and such an interesting and vibrant woman. So I'm really excited to dig into this one.
Let's do it. So it starts off this story, The Lazy River. We know where we are. We know what's going on from just the first few sentences. I mean, Jen, did you know what a lazy river was? Because I actually didn't when I first started reading it. I had to be told.
No, I do know what a lazy river is, but I don't think I've ever been in one. But I am aware of the concept of this kind of, it's like a pool with a current in it, basically, that takes you around in a circle. It's a very...
A never-ending circle.
It's the kind of thing you'd get like at a water park. I spent a lot of this story thinking, what kind of hotel is she in that has one of these huge lazy rivers in? Like, it must be like an enormous all-inclusive kind of resort.
Yeah. I've never been to an all-inclusive resort. In the States, at least on the West Coast, if people go to all-inclusive resorts, it's in Mexico. So that's what I kind of, even though this was set in Spain, that was kind of my frame of reference, where the photos I see of my friends like lounging on beach chairs in front of beautiful pools and the sparkling water, which sounds like what she's setting up here is this group of friends at this hotel going round and round in circles on this lazy river.
Yeah. I think the thing about the all-inclusive hotel that she talks about, which totally sums up, I think, for me, what I envisage the experience of being in an all-inclusive place to be, is where she says, the plan is to beat our hotel at its own game. What you do is you do this. You drink so much alcohol that your accommodation is effectively free. Only the most vulgar among us speak this plan aloud, but we are all on board. And I just love that sort of... I just love that transparency. Like, that is 100%. I don't know if that's what happens when your friends go to Mexico, but that is the British person's experience of being in an all-inclusive hotel. like 1000%. It's like if you haven't had four ice creams before lunch, then you've probably made a terrible mistake in terms of your budgeting for the holiday.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what my friends are doing. I'm 100% positive. My understanding of all-inclusive resorts is the idea is to like go but not have to plan anything, you know, to actually get a vacation, especially for people who have children and who taking their children on vacation is not a vacation because there's all the planning and crying. And I'm guessing we don't have children, but that's the idea, is that there's everything you need right there. The kids can run around, they're going to be safe. The food's already cooked, the drinks are made, and you can just get drunk with your friends.
Yeah.
So the idea is really fun, but yet in this story, Zadie's taking us on a different kind of emotional path. I do not feel like this is a fun all-inclusive resort.
No. And I think it's interesting that she starts with that line that you were reading where she says, then we all climb back into the metaphor. I mean, she's setting up the idea that we are in a kind of alternative space. So the story that she's describing, this all-inclusive resort, even though she brings it to life in a way that I feel is very real and very relatable and in a way that really draws us in, there's this kind of parallel narrative, which is actually that there is no hotel, there is no lazy river, that we're living inside this metaphor of her story. And then that's in the first like couple of sentences. So my experience of reading this was partly, lol, look at the life in this all-inclusive resort, and partly, what is the metaphor? What is this alternative layer that she's pulling us into, and what does she mean?
Absolutely. It's very uneasy, the way that she breaks that almost fourth wall.
Yeah.
With us immediately. As you mentioned, she says, then we all climb back into the metaphor. The lazy river is a circle. It is wet. It has an artificial current. Even if you don't move, you will get somewhere and then return to wherever you started. And if we may speak of the depth of a metaphor, well then, it is about 3 feet deep, excepting a brief stretch at which point it rises to 6 feet 4. And then she goes on to talk about what happens when they get to that point in the lazy river, which is a little bit different than the rest, that's deeper. And so when you're reading it, you're thinking, obviously we're clearly talking about a lazy river, but she's really asking us to engage with it on a macro level about life, about movement that we want, about forward progress or the illusion of forward progress. And since this was written in 2017, knowing that, I'm already ill at ease. I'm already like, is someone going to get murdered in this resort? Like, what is this going to turn into a horror story? And it isn't a horror story, but I don't feel good at the end of it.
Right. It's interesting that you mentioned 2017. So this was published in December in 2017. And I read an interview with her about this story. And she says, I thought of it as a story about despair, personal, political, historical, and cultural despair. So, like, this is a story. This lazy river, this metaphor is, you know, she says in that first paragraph, all life is in here, flowing, flowing, round and round we go. But she's talking about despair. She's talking about life as despair. And it's interesting, you know, on the other side of... of 2017. I mean, 2017 now, because of the pandemic, because of everything else has been happening in the world, feels like a lifetime ago. And in a way, it's like sunshine and roses, I feel like, compared to like 2020, 2021, and 2022.
I know.
Can you think back? Like, what was 2017? What was happening then?
Well, personally, 2017 was important because that's when I met you, Jen.
I mean, it was a year of hope and joy.
So personally, yeah, Jen and I were just becoming friends. But again, on a macro level, Trump had just become president and I lived outside of the country for all of 2017. I was in Latin America for the first half and then I was in Southern Africa with you. And it felt really strange to be watching the unraveling of our democracy from abroad and to be watching just, you know, Trump take power and start to immediately rip apart things that I had thought were fundamental to American society. It felt like things were so out of our control. there was also these massive wildfires happening in Oregon, in one of my favorite places. And I was watching these parks and trails of my childhood get decimated by forest fires. So it was just, it was a time where I felt like I was watching the world pass by and I could do nothing. I could do nothing to change it. And she captures that immediately right off the bat. What about you, Jen? What was happening in your mind?
In my mind, in my heart. So in 2017, I obviously also was where you were. So I wasn't in Britain, but the big thing that was happening in Britain, to Britain at that time, was that the first kind of political impact of Brexit started to come to the fore. So basically in 2017, that was when Article 50 was triggered, which was kind of the beginning of the actual kind of uncoupling that happened after Brexit. And it basically sort of started the clock on how long we had to work out how, you know, Britain and the European Union were going to separate, what that implication was going to be in terms of freedom of movement, in terms of the kind of the free market, and how everything that was going to change as a result of Brexit, like what those changes were, started to be discussed in Parliament, started to be discussed kind of between Britain and the EU. And it was a really difficult year politically, and I think for people who didn't want necessarily to leave the EU and who had voted to remain, it was hard, because everyone started to see what the impact of this was genuinely going to be. And I think for people who voted to leave, you know, a lot of the promises that were made, it became clear that that was not going to be something that would be able to come true. So, you know, as these kind of very difficult political processes were beginning, I think the whole country started to feel fairly despondent, because neither those who wanted to stay and those who wanted to leave were really seeing a positive outcome to the vote that they'd made. And it was a really difficult time for Britain. And Zadie Smith is a British author. She's from London. She was living in the US, I think, at this time. So she was really seeing both of those two things playing out. And I think it's interesting that, you know, we look at this towards the end of the year, coming out towards the end of the year, and her talking about that despair, and then just this sense of the lazy river and going round and round and sort of not being able to get off this treadmill, the current pulling you forwards. Is really interesting.
I want to ask you more about just the inherent Britishness of this story, because I said to you before we started recording that there were things that I was going to have to ask you, because maybe just my American sensibility missed it. But it's a very British story. She names off the bat that this group that is in this resort in Spain is British. And she talks also about that, you know, being British, but almost never leaving the resort. You know, they only leave to go get the flotation devices, and then they leave once again to go get their hair braided and for the kids to jump on the trampoline. But I bring that up just as it reminds me of this sense of there's things that are happening outside this lazy river that are very different than the idyllic kind of going around and around in a circle and not having to make any decisions and not having to do anything. There are political forces that are happening just in the town around them, but they're not really seeing that. They're focused on this moment in time in the resort that is without much stimuli, that is without much stress, without much conflict or difficulty. They're not thinking deeply about what it means to be at this resort. But it sneaks in anyway.
I think what's interesting in the context of what we've just been talking about in terms of what was happening in 2017 is she very specifically names that we're somewhere in southern Spain. She says that there's nobody French or German here in the hotel. She says, for in this hotel, we are all British. We are en masse. We are unashamed. We enjoy each other's company. It's an island, right? She's created this island of the hotel where you're cut off. They're cut off. They don't go outside. They don't sort of barely stray outside the resort. I think it's interesting that even though she talks about it being in Spain, she mentions that there's nobody French or German. So like, this is a European, we're in Europe, we're on continental Europe, and like Britain has like created its own little island and sort of is pretending it's not there. Instead of eating paella, they're eating sausages and chips. This hotel that they're in, there's this layer of it, which is like, we don't need to leave. There's no reason to leave. Everything we want is here. We're completely self-sufficient. We learn that it is an absolute kind of glass house. There's people who come in at night to clean the lazy river. She sees people as they're going to and from their hotel who are immigrant communities, African, sort of North African communities, but everything's kept very separate to this bubble, this British bubble. And it's really difficult for me to read because I think that is one of the inherent challenges that we have as a nation in terms of how we view ourselves in the world. Britain sort of prides itself on its identity as an island nation, as this idea that we're not really European because we're not joined by the land, and there's a sort of sense that we're this great independent self-sufficient country. But actually, like, nothing of that has ever really been true, and a lot of our economy, a lot of our culture has been very heavily influenced and propped up by our European neighbors and our part within this European economy. The bubble that we like to imagine that we live in is actually very vulnerable. It's not this kind of fortress. And I think that that's something that Zadie Smith kind of picks on here and draws out with this idea of this all-inclusive hotel. It's like, you don't need to leave. Everything you need is here. And that's, so you realize that that actually means you're having a very singular time and you're not engaging with this much broader, much richer culture just outside the walls of this hotel.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad we're talking about this because I'm learning so much just from hearing you describe it that way.
Are you learning about my despair?
Your apathy? Well, as an American who our nation is founded on this idea, this lie that we are independent and self-sufficient and pull you up by your bootstraps, it's interesting to think about culturally, you know, we may have inherited that and then taken it to an absurd extreme, but we may have inherited that from the British. It's just interesting to think about how these cultural ideas and myths and narratives really play out, and especially 5 years later.
Yeah.
Zadie seems to be capturing here the fact that you can create your own reality within an all-inclusive resort, within a country that ignores the reality of what's happening outside, ignores the contradictions, ignores the difficulties of what it really takes to run a nation, to run a resort. And the fact that even though she's inside this all-inclusive resort and all these people are there, are they having fun? It doesn't feel like it.
Yeah, it's kind of it's almost like a self-fulfilling sort of prophecy, the way that they live their life within this resort. But something you were just saying there also made me really think about this idea of kind of the reality within this bubble and then the kind of reality of what's outside of it. Because another way I think you could interpret the metaphor of the lazy river or the world within this resort, which she touches on a few times through the story, is actually, it could be just as much about our lives, the way that we live our lives online. I don't know if you picked up on that, and it pops up a few times within the story, but it really started to strike me as another way that this resort, that this lazy river, could equally be the way that we start to interact with each other through social media, the kind of insular nature of the connections that we make sort of through social media, the way that we live within our own bubbles there, where we don't have to engage with what's outside of our kind of comfort zone. And I don't know if you, what you thought about that, if that's something that struck you as well.
I'm nodding vigorously while you say all this and thinking to myself, like, speaking of the themes of apathy and despair, let's talk about social media.
I hope you everyone's still with us. It's like, we're episode one, season three, and it's like, oh God.
The collapse of the nations. I know, I used late stage capitalism in the first 3 minutes and I was like, oh, Lizzie, come on, calm down.
Stay with us, friends.
Stay with us. I think we talked about this in Cat Person and some of the other stories we've read, but I love whenever an author can talk about social media in a way that feels fresh and new, because it's just inherently difficult to be like, to write about texting or write about, as she does here, the kind of performance of influencers. So I thought that was a really interesting scene where she talks about these two sisters who get up every morning and get kind of these coveted spots by the pool that are these kind of beds, these four poster beds, and then they spend all day posing and taking photos with their cameras and then kind of readjusting and making sure the light's good. And that's what they do. And she talks about their how they're not being paid for that work. She talks about that performance and creation of content for social media.
Yeah. It's interesting because as she describes those two, she sort of explicitly names that she's not going to judge them. That nobody judges anybody in this space. But the way that she kind of turns her gaze on these two and the detail with which she describes them shows that, like, there is an inherent observation, there is an inherent judgment. And then what you realize then kind of later in the story, it comes up again as she talks about, you know, not wanting her children to have a phone or a tablet until they're at least 12. And you sort of get the sense that she's trying to reject that social media kind of world. But then at the very end, you know, she says, we separate from our friends and their children and ascend to our room, which is the same as their room and everybody's room, and put the children to bed and sit on the balcony with our laptops and our phones, where we look up his Twitter as we have every night since January. Here on there, on other balconies, we spot other men and women on other loungers with other devices engaged in much the same routine. Down below, the lazy river runs a neon blue, a crazy blue, a Facebook blue. You know, as she's describing those kind of two young women performing this sort of version of their lives online, she's observing it. And then later that day, she's observing it again in another way. She's kind of sees how everybody is living on these devices. She talks about that idea that they've seen the world through this lens every night since January. Like, this is how 2017 has played out. And even that lazy river is running a Facebook blue. So, you know, is that river just social media that sweeps us along and we just go round and round and we don't have any, you know, we're not trying to swim against the stream? Like, what does that mean?
I don't know, but Zadie Smith was depressed when she wrote this and now I am depressed. You know, that's how this feels to me.
Oh, God.
You know, that's how I feel about social media is kind of gasp, stumble. It's the inherent kind of thing where we try to control social media for kids. I do this with my niece. We do it with kids, as we should. We should limit their screen time. But then for ourselves, we are absolutely just fall right back into it as adults. I think many of us are less equipped than children will be to monitor it. But this was, I had to read this a few times to realize that when she talks about viewing his Twitter, I just missed it the first time. It's, of course, it's Trump. And the way we were glued to his Twitter from the beginning of 2017. Oh, you didn't realize that?
No, I didn't realize. I made a shocked face. What do you mean?
Is it him? Oh, okay. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Which I love because as an American, this is giving me the opportunity to make this about us again. No, but I love that she doesn't name him. But the thing about Trump, as we all remember, is before he was elected, he was very active on Twitter. And what his supporters said was he's not going to use Twitter once he becomes president. He won't use it. to rule, LOL. Then he immediately announced the Muslim ban, the ban on travelers from, I think it was 6 or 7 primarily Muslim nations. I mean, immediately, the first month or two. And then he began his daily barrage of tweets. And it, as an American waking up in the morning, and as, I mean, it could affect the whole world at any point. It was, what is he going to take aim at today? Like, what has he seen on Fox News that he's going to try to legislate through Twitter today? Yeah, that's what she's referring to me, because he came into office in January 2017. And his Twitter was used to rule the country and the world until they kicked him off. Gracias a Dios.
Just before that final section, it's interesting that this, how these things kind of layer on top of each other in the story, because just before then is when she talks about the women who are on the beach, one's from Senegal, the other one's from Gambia. She sort of implies that they've kind of crossed the ocean to come here from Northern Africa. And she describes them as, they are both the type who could swim the lazy river backward and all the way around. In fact, isn't this what they have done? One is called Mariatu, the other Cynthia. For 10 euros, they will plait hair in cane rows or Senegalese twists or high-ridge Dutch braids. And you just get this sense that these women are kind of the strongest characters in the story. I think you mentioned just before we started recording, they're the only ones who get a name. The only ones who are named. And it's so interesting because you kind of get the sense of these people who have taken a different path, these people who are living outside of the bubble, these people who are living some form of their reality, which has forced them to swim another way, which has shown their strength. And it's very interesting that she puts that right next to this kind of section where she talks about social media and she talks about this world that everybody's inhabiting through their devices and through their this observation of the world rather than the engagement in and having to really grapple with what it would mean to swim against the current. Like, what does that mean? And how have these women, you know, had to show a different type of strength? I think it's just part of the layering of this story that just makes me stop breathless and go, Zadie Smith, what are you doing to me? I can't kind of take in how dense and complicated this is, whilst also going, this is a fun story about an all-inclusive resort. Lol.
I think part of it to me too is I love that she names these characters. I love that they get to have a moment when pretty much no one else, as we've talked about, is mentioned or gets, we don't know anything about their past. We don't know really what they do. There's some markers of if they're educated or not, this group of British people, which I want to ask you about. But thinking about this story set in 2017, such a moment of apathy and despair, but it feels different 5 years later. I mean, I think part of the feeling of reading this story now is knowing what comes next and knowing that, okay, we're feeling apathetic and despair in this moment, and we don't know what's coming. We don't know the global pandemic. It is pretty wild to read a story set in 2017 as if 2017 is this year of absolute horror and despair, because fun fact, we just didn't know. We were not prepared for what was coming next.
It is interesting. There's a line that I feel in this story really sums up what you're describing, where she says, and we all looked up at the blood red moon, that bad faith moon of 2017, and each man and woman among us understood in that moment that there is no vacation you can take from a year such as this. Still, it was beautiful. That struck me so hard, that line, because, you know, they've come away, they're living in this bubble of the hotel, but actually you can't get away from any of it. But they're also not getting away from it, because they're still looking at Trump's social media page every day. They're still sort of, you know, they're not kind of engaging with another reality. They're not taking themselves on holiday in order to look at the Moorish ruins and the incredible mountainscapes that they describe seeing in this place. They're on holiday in a place that's just like the place they've come from, because they're all British people. They're living in this kind of social media bubble. And it's just interesting, that sense of like, there's no vacation you can take from a year such as this is like pretty devastating. Now also thinking about that for the last few years, but it's also like, how are we giving ourselves breaks from our reality anymore? Like, how are the technology that surrounds our lives allowing us to truly take a vacation? Like, how are we allowing ourselves to take that break? How are we enabling ourselves? And are we in any way, you know, like I go on holiday and I'm completely reliant on my phone to like make payments and know where I am. And at the same time that I get my phone out to check, you know, how I get around using a map because I don't have a guidebook anymore, I see my, you know, WhatsApp notifications and my Twitter notifications and like things go wild. And so you're kind of like suddenly tuned into the news because, you know, the news is always crazy, and it has been for the last few years.
Yeah, it feels like 2017 was the beginning of this never, it wasn't, of course, but it feels like the never-ending news cycle because of Brexit, because of Trump and Twitter. It was, you know, you had to stay tuned in because something devastating was always right around the corner. Yeah, I don't know how you take a break from that.
And I think that there's moments in the story where she also kind of finds a way, I think, to reflect on that. So she described, we're seeing this lazy river as a metaphor where we just go round and round and we're swept through the current. And then there's this moment where she describes her children going on trampolines, and she sort of asks whether being on the trampoline is a better metaphor for life because it's ups and downs. And then she sort of talks herself out of it because it's not, she doesn't feel like it's ups and downs. And she just sees it as downs, as sort of a consistent lazy river of down. It's like,
no. Oh God. I'm so glad you brought that up because it's just a few lines about the trampoline and the children jumping on it. And then it's like, actually, life is a depressing circle of nothingness. But yet I've read this story 5 or 6 times because she is able to capture this moment in time, this isolationism, the feeling of social media, the staging yourself for social media, all of it in a story about an all-inclusive resort.
It is incredible. And there's so many tiny things which are peppered into this story. Like I've not read it as many times as you have. But like the things I was writing down. So she mentions again and again that only time people have left the resort is to buy these flotation devices. And I was like, oh, flotation devices. Like, what is she talking about? What are those? What are those within the metaphor? And then like, when she sort of mentioned the sort of difficulty of kind of crossing the seas from Northern Africa, you know, you also can't remember that 2017 was right in the middle of what is really catastrophically still happening, which is this migration, obviously, to Europe from mainland Europe, also to the UK, with people going out in flotation devices. They're going out in life jackets, which aren't strong enough. They're in dinghies, which aren't strong enough for the currents. And
oh my God, yeah.
You know, we were living with so much of that imagery at this time. And it just keeps coming up in her story. And I can't see.
Damn.
It's like,
you're right.
How are you doing this to us, Sadie? Like, how are you pulling that in? But within the context of this very different story, she's kind of finding moments and images which key into this horrible, devastating year of news that we had and that imagery that we were seeing.
I completely missed that. That is such a good call out. I completely missed that flotation device reference. And as soon as you said it, you know, it brought back this wave of images and of children dying on the beaches, of how horrific that actually really was and still is. And I think that's the strength of this story, is the capturing of a moment in time, because 5 years later, it can bring us right back to what was a really specific moment in history. And yeah, we didn't know what was coming. And so part of me was like, we didn't know what was coming, but it was specific and horrific and laid the groundwork for where we are now. And it's important to be able to reflect on that. But the way she captures it, I feel like the more we read this, the more small images that can be traced back to 2017. And the way that the horror, the onslaught of horror at this time made everyone feel not everyone, but many people, myself included, feel apathetic and scared and retreat farther into your insular community and holes that you lived in to try to feel safe. And we can talk about whether that was planned or not and if the government wanted to do that and wanted to make us feel this way. But wow, Jen, this is why I love to read with you, because you catch things and you put things in a different light than I wouldn't have gotten by myself.
I mean, I think this is definitely a story that we needed to discuss, because the first time I read it, I loved it. And I messaged you immediately and I was like, oh, I love this. And I remember I was reading it on my own, as often I do, with a glass of wine. And I was kind of having a great time because there's so many things about, like, this story is funny. Mm-hmm. This story is funny. She is an incredibly funny writer. And like, I went to see, you mentioned at the beginning that she has also written a play. I went to see that play and it's like, it was laugh out loud funny, but it also was dealing with these huge questions around immigration, around Britishness, around colonialism. And she's doing the same thing here. She writes something that feels very accessible, very sort of light and fun and funny, but she is layering in these comments and this commentary about what it means to be British, what it means to be European, what it means to be a person who is living in a very sort of social media first world. And exactly as you're saying, how we are being led more and more into sort of safe spaces where we want to be around people who are just like us, where we don't want to judge those people. She keeps mentioning, like, this is a non-judgmental space. And it's because you don't need to judge any of the people on the inside who are like you, but you're not grappling with the people on the outside, as it were, in this story, who are different, who have had a different course. And she makes this island. She makes this island of the hotel with the lazy river. You know, she describes everything on the outside as kind of as the other. And also it feels kind of dangerous and strange, that world outside. Like, there's this amazing bit where she talks about the sea. And she says, once you have entered the lazy river, with all its pliability and ease, its sterilizing chlorine and swift yet manageable currents, it is very hard to accept the sea. Its abundant salt, its marine life, those little islands of twisted plastic. She just distances ourselves from everything else that we might have known so that we can retreat into a sort of sterilized, easy space. Oh, she's incredible. Thank you, Zadie Smith.
I think I found a quote from the New York Times wrote about her short story collection, Grand Union, which this is featured in. And there's a line in it written by Rebecca Mackay in 2019, and says, take the lazy river, in which a first-person narrator considers the pool attraction at a resort in southern Spain as a metaphor for modern inertia. Nothing happens in this story, and yet every line dazzles, and it lands on a note of eerie clarity.
Thanks for reading with me, Lizzie.
Thanks for reading with me, Jen.